Episode number 301, How to Be the Church, with Ronnie Phillips Jr. and Dr. Gary Chapman. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Hey guys, welcome to Making Sunday Happen. Hope you're having a great week. This is episode number 301 of our podcast. Father's Day is quickly upon us, and we have some amazing new Father's Day media content in our library, specifically made for the Father's Day worship experiences at your church. Just go to 1230.media/dad to check out all of our Father's Day content. That's 1230.media/dad. Some great mini movies to use as service openers, also title graphics, full Father's Day series boxes, and more. Just go to 1230.media/dad to check that out. Well, I have had the privilege this year of attending two regional B Church conferences. This is a new conference from my pastor friend, Tony Valdez. And Tony has put together a great lineup of speakers and worship leaders in Atlanta and Greensboro and Chicago this year. I attended both the Atlanta conference and then the Greensboro, North Carolina conference as well. And while we were in Greensboro, we got to chat with a few of the speakers there at the event. So we're going to share those interviews with you this week and next week on the podcast. This week, I'll share my interview with the senior pastor of Abba's House in Chattanooga, Tennessee, my friend Ronnie Phillips Jr. And later in the podcast today, you'll hear from the author of The Five Love Languages and all of its spinoffs. Dr. Gary Chapman will be on the podcast today as well. So you're going to love hearing from both of those guys today. My interview with Ronnie Phillips Jr. is coming up first, right after I tell you about a great new project that our team has been working on called Church Media Masterclass. Check this out. Hey guys, I wanted to let you know about a brand new project that we're a part of. We have teamed up with NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters, to bring you a 10-class course called Church Media Masterclass. This course will give you practical training as a church tech and communicator and feature incredible content from my friend Phil Cook, yours truly, Dan Darling from NRB, Stephen Brewster, Mark McDonald, Brad Weston from ProPresenter, Nate Anderson from Resi, Jeff Reed from Stadia Church Planning, Josh Brown from His Productions, our creative director Sean Reese, and more. This is conference level content for an extremely low price. I'm talking under $10 per class. Register for the Church Media Masterclass today at churchmediamasterclass.com. That's churchmediamasterclass.com. Hey guys, I'm here with Ronnie Phillips Jr. from Abba's House, lead pastor, right?
Yes.
All right, so we have a connection because I was on staff at Precept Ministries International in Chattanooga, and that's where Abba's House is, actually in Hickson, which is a little bit outside of Chattanooga, right? Tell me about it.
Right. My father and I both love K. Arthur, yep. And Abba's House is a house of grace with a statue of the prodigal son in front of the auditorium and the statues from Hebron, Israel. And, you know, with my story, I was a prodigal. So I'm for everybody, and I believe that grace is still what catches them.
Yeah.
And so we're a house of grace, and it's just been an honor to be pastor there in Hickson, yeah, and be connected with you guys and the great work you guys do. It's just really cool.
Yeah, thanks, man. For people who don't know your story, get into that a little bit. So your dad was a senior pastor for, almost 40 years, right?
Correct.
And then you took over 4 or 5 years ago?
I did. It was really, I had a prodigal's journey, and if I told you that story, I'd keep you on here for an hour.
Well, I'm a PK too, so
we've chewed the kindred. Same dirt then.
Yeah.
My father took the church during a very tumultuous time in 1979. It was Central Baptist Church. The pastor before him had been accused of murdering his wife. So my dad walked into hell. Yeah. And it only got worse during my childhood. So I was very bitter against church. I saw people treat my family horribly, but I had a call on my life. I loved my father. I traveled with him, and I felt called to ministry at 8, but because of my own bitterness and struggles and many other things, I ran away from the Lord, got married, worked in corporate America, but that call never left me. God never left me. And I fell under conviction at age 23 on my way to a bar, and the Holy Spirit would not leave me alone. And I repented, got my life right, got my marriage right that night, surrendered to the ministry on my tile bathroom floor in tears. Said, Lord, I don't know if you want to use this mess, but if you do, it's yours.
Yeah.
And that created kind of a fast track. I kept my corporate job. I started teaching small groups, preaching at rehabs, prisons, got back into school to finish my education, seminary, all those things, and eventually pastored in Atlanta.
Okay.
And I came back as my dad's associate after serving there. And when I did, my father had quadruple bypass, nearly died, and we put him on the shelf for 6 months and took his phone. And I had to leave the church at 29, which was the sovereignty of God, because people have watched me grow up and they got to see me lead kind of out of the shadows.
Right.
And then my father got healthy. We had a big reunion for him and said, get out of my seat. You're in my seat. And I said, yes, sir. It's still your seat. And
so you took over for that period?
I did. And the staff really rallied around me. The church really rallied. And at that point, we put with our elders a succession plan in place. And I started kind of co-leading at that point. And I took over in 2018, 1-1, but started really leading probably the summer of 17. And man, it's just been incredible. But we had many changes we needed to make.
Yeah.
My father, said this. He said, I still love this church, but I don't have a vision for it. How can I help you? He knew his season was at an end in that role.
Right.
He still helps pastors, and God's given him more life and health, and he still helps pastors and stuff. But
yeah,
as far as pastoring that local body, that season was over. So we had to kind of relaunch that church.
So how about this? So I didn't know we would go here, but so I've had a lot of ministry experience and my dad was a pastor. How do you wrestle with either being burned in ministry or maybe seeing the behind the scenes dirty part of ministry? How do you wrestle with that? Because I think, I sometimes think if I wasn't such a strong believer, I'll just say it, that I'd maybe question the church or find something else to do. Yeah, man, because sometimes it gets dirty and it gets hard you get burned or and it's not just like I'm disgruntled and I'm bitter. It's like these are, whoa. there's some big things that happen that is the dirty side. How do you wrestle with that, and how do you not want to walk away?
Well, it nearly destroyed me in my early life. It was probably the main reason I got into drugs as a teenager. So much hatred and bitterness and hurt, things that were said to me, things that I saw happen to my father, lies. And at that point, I would say that church people were the meanest people I'd ever met. You'd be treated in most churches, you'd probably be treated better in a bar. And but what had happened is I allowed all that to create bitterness in me, and it was hindering me. It wasn't hurting the people that hurt us.
Right.
So I had to forgive them, and I had to let them go. And then I had to embrace I have a father for myself.
Yep.
And so I had to let that go. But what I will say is, you have to seek God for yourself and seek His kingdom. And the Holy Spirit helps carry me through it, because even, succeeding my father, I inherited some staff and I brought in my team. There were people that were coasting that no longer loved the church, but just wanted a paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, I got some of the most horrendous resignation letters you've ever imagined, not thanking anyone, not my father, not the people that hired them. And I had to really go through a plunging season there when I took over to get our budget right. And it was just kind of the enemy could have used that as an opportunity to make me bitter again.
Yeah.
But I just had to try to continue to love people and give them the benefit of the doubt and just keep my eyes on the prize, the big picture of seeing people saved, discipleship, seeing marriages put back together, and just loving on Jesus, man. I mean, if I keep my eyes, and I'm naturally gifted at people. I love people. I love sinners. And I'm an evangelist at heart. But the religious nonsense, I had to kind of prepare our team, especially my leadership team, in a way that would protect me from most of it. And not that I'm, you know, I'm not going to be with the sheep. I'll be with my sheep. But as far as staff drama and nonsense, I have two executive pastors. One handles the ministry opportunities. One handles the operations. And I meet with them, and then I meet with everybody once a month and teach them. But I'm the encourager, cheerleader, I love you guy. And right. they are the, hey, why didn't you do your job? And that's helped me not have to wait in, because my father did it all. Mm-hmm. He waded into every situation and the stress. And, you know, it was just too much. And right. we really feel like, you know, that really led to the decline in his health. Just 50 years of pastoring, yeah. you know, man, that'll bring you some stress.
Yeah, so my dad's a pastor too, and he was in a situation kind of similar and had two heart attacks. And so I'm right there with you. You know, it can take a toll and on your emotions and on your spiritual life sometimes. And I think that that's a piece of ministry that people don't see always. You're speaking tonight at the conference. Tell me a little bit about what you're going to speak on.
You know, I prayed about it with Pastor Tony, who founded the Speed Church movement. And I really just wanted to share some of my journey with the Holy Spirit. And I'm going to give them four characteristics of a kingdom church. And honestly, this is really the vision God put on my heart 2016, leading up to 18 for Abbas House, is that one, we would be a place of glory where God's glory is made manifest, a place of worship where we truly worship Jesus, not style, but Jesus. Next, we'd be a place of grace where prodigals could come home. And third, we'd be a generous place. We would be known for how we serve and what we give and what we sow into our community and into the nations. Not gimme, 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 but what can we do to change the dynamics in Chattanooga and our region? And I believe if we'll focus on those three things as an individual, then we'll become great. And so I want Abbas House to be a great place. And that'll only happen if Jesus is there, right. because he's what makes a church great. And we as individuals, you know, we have to be people committed to God's glory, his yeah. grace, his generosity, and we have to be connected with him. So I'm last tonight, so I may give little cups of Red Bull for communion tonight because they'll have heard four preachers. But my hope is just to encourage them yeah. to write the vision, make it plain for their ministry. You know, they don't have to have my mission statement for Abbas House, but I wanted them to see kind of the journey that led me to where he's led me to, because, you know, the best advice I ever got, and I'm sure your dad told you the same thing, it's so cool how our stories yeah. are so similar. Yeah. But the greatest advice my dad ever gave me was be yourself. And, you know, I have people all the time come up to me because, you know, we're a spirit-filled church and lean charismatic. We're not goofy, but we lean that way. And so, you know, you'll have people come up to you and they'll go, hey, man, I got a word from God for you. I got a prophetic word. And I'm like, all right, what is it? And they're like, you don't have to be your dad. And I always laugh at that because, yes, that's a good word. But honestly, like, that has never been my struggle. I have had plenty of struggles that God's had to bring me through.
Right.
But I love my dad. He's my hero, but I'm not him. And at 23, when I came to Christ, crying on my bathroom floor, I laid all those identity issues down that night and settled even some relationship struggles with my father that night. God moved in a powerful way. And so I love my dad to be with me. I've had preacher friends of his go, how do you preach in front of your dad? Because their dads or pastors are like, it would make me so nervous. And I'm like, he's my dad.
Right.
Like, I like to preach in front of him, you know, he's my dad, you know, I'm sorry you have daddy issues. I don't, you know, you know, it's just been a really cool journey and there's always wounds behind worship. There's always a struggle behind the story. And I think our generation is better at kind of getting the whole story. You know, we look at preachers or pastors or business leaders and we think, man, they've got it all together, but we don't really know the hell they fought to get to where God called them to.
Yeah, and I think that people respond to authenticity more than anything. I would. I don't know if that's a generational thing, but I'm looking for it. You don't have to be perfect. I'm not expecting you to be perfect on stage or off the stage. And the more that you're humble about who you are, the more I respect you.
Yeah.
So, all right, last question for you. So what advice would you give to pastors? Obviously, we've been through a crazy year, and you guys are now meeting physically and digitally, right? So tell me any advice that you would give to pastors on maybe innovations that you guys have implemented, or sure, how are you guys moving forward?
You know, we had to kind of redefine church and spend weeks talking about it, preaching about it, teaching about it. And we have to constantly, even after 4 years, remind our church of our mission that God has given us so that they'll know it by heart. And after 4 years, they're starting to get the mission down, who we're called to be. I would simply tell a young pastor, your dream is not going to happen overnight. Stay the course. Take time to rest spiritually and physically. Yeah. It will survive without you. Spend time with your family. Make those memories. Love your children if you have them. Keep things in perspective. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Be yourself. And, you know, for post-pandemic advice, I don't know that we've done it all right. We're all learning on the fly. We did move from just kind of streaming our service for people who couldn't make it to creating an online campus where we have pastors interacting with people. We pre-film it. Our media team's done a fabulous job. I can't take credit for that. They've pulled it off. And I would say, you know, you need to have an online presence. I don't think you have to go crazy with it.
Right.
God will get you out there if he's anointed you to be out there. Right. You just have to trust him and do your part. And I would, if you're just now starting to meet, we were only shut down 6 weeks because we have a Godnasium, and so we had plenty of room to distance. And so I would say this, one of the things we did was we really gave our best effort to contact each member, which our role is big. And like I said, we have a Baptist type role, but we can only find about half of them. So we have 4,000 on the roll, but you know, we get a couple thousand, but we really tried to connect. How are you doing? Where are you at? How can we pray for you? And I think church is recovering right now. It's going to be back. Keep the faith, but call your people. You know, if you have a team like mine, you can delegate and spread it out. But I participated too. I mean, I think you've got to love on your people, even if they're not going to come back for another 4 months. You've got to check on them.
Right.
And if you're called to be a shepherd, I'd say love on your people, even if it's through social media or a phone call or a text message. Get out there and check on your people, and you'll be back.
Yeah,
that's what I would say to these young pastors. Your church is going to recover. Just hang in there. Yeah. God's up to something.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks for your time,
man. Thank you. It. Glad we got to connect. Really yeah. Cool.
Hey guys, before we dive into my interview with Dr. Gary Chapman, I wanted to point you to a recent blog article on our blog from Mark Gawith from Switcher Studio. We recently released an article entitled "How to Get More Engagement with Your Church Livestream." And in the article, Mark talks about how to add a compelling title, how to gather graphics before going live, ways to encourage viewers to engage with your content, and more. I think it will help you enhance your online worship experience. Again, the title of it is "How to Get More Engagement with Your Church Livestream." It's available now at 1230.media/blog. Again, 1230.media/blog. Our blog is entirely free for you. We release a new article every single week. So check it out, 1230.media/blog. All right, let's keep the interviews from Be Church Conference moving with my chat with the author of The 5 Love Languages, Dr. Gary Chapman. Check this out. Hey guys, I'm hanging out with Dr. Gary Chapman. Dr. Chapman, thanks so much for hanging out. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So before we get going, I have a story about you. So I've been helping with the NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, for almost 20 years.
Okay.
And I think this was like the first or second time I volunteered. I was working like a registration desk. Mm-hmm. And you walk up and I see your name. Oh, Gary Chapman. You sing country music. And you go, No, son, I write books. Okay. I remember that story for years.
Oh, yes.
You have had an incredible career and author and on staff at your church, and you're retiring here in the next few months, right?
Yes, I have been on the same church staff for 50 years. So I told the pastor, I think it's time for me to step off the payroll.
So you just got off stage talking about one of your latest books. Remind me of the title, something about how to say you're sorry, correct?
Yeah, it's called When Sorry Isn't Enough. It's How to Apologize Effectively by learning that there's more than one way to apologize. And we all have a different idea on what is sincere. So you have to find out what that apology language is if you want to be effective.
So let's talk five love languages and how to say I'm sorry when it has to do with pastors, staff members, tech leaders in churches. I was talking with someone earlier about the incredible stats of the divorce rate in among church staff, that it's literally 50%, and that pastors feel lonely at the top, and marriages struggle and things like that. And of course, your teachings and writings can really—I mean, marriages are you know, similar with staff members as well. Bring me into that. Help me make that connection.
Well, I think two things. I think one is that pastors and staff members of churches are human.
Yeah.
We have the same basic needs that other humans have in terms of human relationships. So, giving our marriages and our families priority is extremely important. I tell you the most sobering question that I asked myself along the journey that helped me make significant changes in the way I spend my time. And that is, what if every couple in my church had the same kind of marriage that I have? And what if they treated their children the same way I treat my children? That's sobering.
Yeah.
That'll help you identify things that need to be changed. So that's one area in which this applies. And the love languages, you know, feeling loved by your parents is a significant thing for young children and for teenagers. And if your children don't feel loved, they're likely going to walk away from what you're teaching. I think another thing is that our model is more important than our words with our children and with our teenagers. But the other thing is, this has an application in the staff relationships. You know, most people on church staff are there because they feel God led them there. They want to make a difference in the world. They want to impact people's lives. But the reason they often leave and go to another church is because they didn't feel appreciated where they were.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not appreciated here. I'm going to go somewhere else. Maybe they'll appreciate what I do. So it's important to know what makes that person feel appreciated. So I wrote the book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. And it applies in church relationships as well as it does, you know, outside the church. And it also has implications for volunteers in the church because, you know, research indicates 50% of the adults in this country volunteer in something every year. That's a pretty high percentage.
Yeah.
And of course, churches operate with volunteer help.
Right.
But if they don't feel appreciated, they may well go to another church and volunteer somewhere else.
That's right. Walk me through those five things, if you can, real quick.
Yeah, one of them is, do they feel loved and appreciated by words of affirmation, just verbalizing it.
Right.
And that's the most common thing we do, but we miss a lot of our people because that's not what makes them feel appreciated. One is acts of service, doing things for them. What could I do that would be helpful to you? And then doing it. Gifts, for some people, is their appreciation language or their love language. Quality time, sitting down, for example, with a staff member and just taking 10 minutes and saying, man, tell me what's going on. How's your life going? Really, really, what's going on? You know, they feel like they're not just a person on the staff. They feel appreciated.
And listen,
you know, that's right. Quality time.
Yep.
And then number five is physical touch. You know, high fives, pat on the back, you know, appropriate hugs, you know, that kind of thing. And each staff member has a primary appreciation language. And you can tell one of them, I really appreciate you, and they get it. And they feel it. But you can say that to the others, and they're thinking, you know, if you really appreciate me, you'd spend time with me. I don't even know who you are. And you don't even know who I am. And they have that feeling, you know.
Right.
And so if you really love me or appreciate me, you'd spend time getting to know me, and we'd have some conversation, not about business and church, but just about me.
Right.
So if a pastor and staff members can get this concept, and the whole staff can take the quiz, Man, it enhances relationships.
So how do I discover, and that might be a part of the quiz, but how do I discover that? How do I know what makes you tick and what's your love language?
Yeah, well, the quiz does help. And with every purchase of the book, you get a free code, a code that gives you a free, what we call motivating by appreciation inventory. And so that's the easiest way. But informally, you can also, if you're around them very much, you can observe their behavior. How do they treat other people? Because if they're always giving encouraging words, it's because they want encouraging words. If they're always like to spend an hour or an hour and a half with lunch with somebody talking to them, quality time is probably their language. So you can observe their behavior sometimes and pick up on it. And then if you have a close relationship, and sometimes on the staff they won't do this, but if they're critical of something, if they're complaining about something, that's revealing really their appreciation language. Their complaint reveals what's lacking in them. And then what do they request most often? If they're always inviting other staff members to go to lunch with them, quality time is probably their language. You know, so what do they request? Those three things can help you informally kind of zone in on their language.
So obviously, tension between staff members can be a thing, or even tension in our marriages, which translates to our ministry. Tell me ways that I can say, I'm sorry. That it's not just, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, give me more.
Well, you know, I think all of us learned a way of apologizing growing up. Little Johnny pushes his sister down the stairs. His mother says, Johnny, you don't do that. Go tell sister you're sorry. So he says, I'm sorry. Even if he's not, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, he's 25. What's he going to say? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But his wife or the other person had different parents. They taught them something different. So what we discovered is there's five basic ways to apologize. One is expressing regret, often with the words, I'm sorry, you know. But tell them what you're sorry for. And then also, not only expressing regret, but admitting that you're wrong, accepting responsibility. Just say, I was wrong. I should not have done that. And sometimes pastors have trouble admitting they're wrong. You know, but sometimes we are wrong. So we need to admit that. And then offering to make restitution. What can I do to make this right? I mean, I value our relationship. So what can I do to make it right? If they have an idea, if this is their language, they'll have an idea. And you do that, man, they see you're sincere. And then also expressing the desire not to do that again. You know, you say, you said it, you're sorry. You did the same thing last month. You said you were sorry. Here you're saying it again. And they're thinking, if you're sorry, you'd do something to change that behavior.
Action.
Yeah. And then last is actually requesting forgiveness. Will you forgive me? Or I hope you can forgive me. And so the basic idea is that what makes one person, how they read sincerity, is different from the way you read sincerity. And that's why it's important to know all five of these. And if it's a close relationship, you can talk about it and find out, you know, what do they expect in an apology. And then you can communicate it in a meaningful way to them.
So in your 50 years at the same church, which is awesome, what advice would you give to pastors? Obviously, in the last few years, we've seen moral failures and things like that. In our culture, maybe shifting a little bit. What advice would you give to pastors to maybe in the future prevent some of those failures?
You know, one thing is I learned back when I was a student at Moody Bible Institute many, many years ago. I was talking to the postmaster. I don't even remember his name. The name of Billy Graham came up. And he said, you know what I pray for Billy Graham every day? I pray that God will keep his heart. That made such an impact on me. I've prayed that for myself ever since. God, keep my heart. Because there's so many things pulling at us today. And pastors can get pulled off track just like anybody else. And that pleases Satan very much. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
But if we're asking God to keep our heart, because everything else flows out of the heart. God, keep my heart. I want to be faithful to the end. Keep my heart. That would be one of the first things I would suggest. And the other is, don't allow yourself to get into situations where you feel a tinge of being tempted, especially if it comes to someone of the opposite sex. You're counseling someone and you feel a little attraction to them. That's the time to say, you know, I'm not going to be able to help you, but I want to refer you to another counselor that I think maybe will help you. And we just don't spend time with that person. Because the more you spend time, the bigger it gets. You know, before long, you're doing something you never, ever thought you would do. So I think we have to have boundaries, as it were, and put them in place for ourselves, to protect ourselves.
All right, last question for you. So you're about to release, or maybe you have released your biography. Is that your latest book?
Yeah,
tell me about it.
It's my memoirs, and I'm excited about it. Looking back over my life, I thought, you know, after you get over 80, it's time to look back and think. How did I become me? What are the influences that made me who I am?
Yeah.
And so I went back to my childhood. I have five sections. I like five. Five sections.
It's worked for you.
Yeah, it's worked for me. In my childhood, and then my educational journey, which for me was a long journey, and what I learned in the classroom and out of the classroom. And then my marriage and what I learned from my marriage, because I would not have gone into counseling had not been for my own marriage and the troubles we had in the early days, which gives me empathy for people that are struggling. And so the impact of my marriage, and then how my children impacted me. We often think of how we impact our children, but they impact us. In fact, I learned how to handle anger from my teenage son after I failed and yelled and screamed at him, and he yelled and screamed at me. And one day I said, Derek, I want to apologize, son. A father should never talk to his son the way I talk to you. And I want to ask you to forgive me. And we sat there and I said, let's see if you and I can learn how to handle anger by talking and listening rather than yelling. So the next time you're angry, just tell me, Dad, I'm angry. Can we talk? And I'll sit down and listen to you. And it was a turning point. We learn from our children, sometimes from our failures with our children. And then the last section is my vocation. You know, the 50 years in the church, but also my writing ministry, my speaking ministry, my radio ministry. And just looking back and seeing the hand of God and all those things, even in the times when we were disappointed and things didn't go the way we thought they ought to go, even through the disappointments, when we look back, we can see God's hand. We can't see it when we're going through it sometimes, but looking back, you can see God's hand.
What's your love language?
Words of affirmation. And my wife's language is acts of service. That's why before I came to this meeting, I took the trash out. And when I get home tonight, she'll tell me I'm the greatest husband in the world.
I was going to ask you, what love language do you struggle with? Or what's something that people would be surprised that you've written about, but you might have a hard time implementing?
Well, the love language thing, once we got that together, it really enhanced our marriage. Before that, in the early days, as I said, we had struggles. Now, we had come to learn each other.
Yeah.
And how to love each other. We didn't call that love language. And I'd learned that doing things for her would make her feel loved. And the way I learned it is, in the early days, I was giving her words of affirmation.
Because that was yours.
Yeah, and I was telling her how much I loved her. And one night she said, you know, you keep saying I love you, I love you. If you love me, why don't you help me? I'm blown out of the saddle. Because
right.
In my mind, I'm loving her. In her mind, if I loved her, I'd be helping her.
Right.
So I started helping her. And then she started giving me affirming words. So without even knowing the concept. And I think many couples have done that, you know.
Yeah.
Look, couples had good marriages before I wrote this book, okay?
Right.
But they stumbled on, they didn't call it love language, but they stumbled on what made each other feel loved.
Right.
And that's what's important,
yeah.
Whether you know the concept or not.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well,
thanks
thank
so
you.
Much.
It's good to chat with you.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about a book that I've put together called The Ultimate Production Team Handbook. This handbook is the definitive companion resource for the volunteer media team at your church. It comes packed with documents and training materials that will give you a massive jumpstart in creating your own manual for your media production team. It includes organizational charts, volunteer job descriptions, training guides, checklists, team lists, scheduling templates, and more. You can take the material and easily adapt it to your team. We even give you permission to edit and produce as many copies of the documents that you may need at your church. I've given you everything that you need to build your own volunteer handbook for your team. And I want you to pick up a copy today at 1230.media/books. That's 1230.media/books.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Well, hey guys, thanks so much for hanging out this week. I hope you enjoyed our chats with Pastor Ronnie Phillips Jr. at Abba's House and also Dr. Gary Chapman. Next week, we will continue our interviews from Be Church Conference. I talked with Alan Holmes, who is the lead pastor at Definition Church. also Shannon Odell, who's the lead pastor at Brand New Church. And I also talked with the husband and wife duo, the team from Cross Purpose Ministries. They are a ministry that helps church staff and leaders with counseling and self-care. It's kind of a solution to the problems that Alan and Shannon are going to bring up in their stats, talking about you, talking about the stats of pastors and church staff members. I hope you realize that the divorce rate for church staff members is 50%, and there's alarming stats on how lonely it is at the top, serving at the top, and that nearly 80% of pastors feel like they have no one to talk to, no best friend that they can share with. And so we're going to share next week both Alan and Shannon, and then Dean and Tom is the couple from Cross Purpose Ministries. They're all going to share about self-care, about those stats, and about how we can find solutions and get better about taking care of ourselves before we can minister to others. Okay, so that is all next week on the show. And in 2 weeks, I'll welcome my friend Michael Lukaszewski from Church Fuel. We're going to be doing 2 weeks with Mike all about church growth and the barriers that pastors face when it comes to growing your worship experiences as well as your church as a whole. So we'll walk through what church growth is, some definitions there about numerical growth and spiritual growth and kingdom growth, and then we'll also dig into some church growth barriers. And Mike really gets into the weeds of some barriers that you as pastors and church leaders face when it comes to growing your church. All right, so that's all coming up in the next few weeks on the podcast. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out. Go out there and create some incredible worship experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit MakingSundayHappen.com.